Hi, everyone. I'm Siobhan Sarna. This is my TV voice. How are you today? I just realized I totally changed my voice. Welcome. We have a very special guest. Kiran Krishnan is here. And you know I love to call him that nerdy name, which is microbiomologist. He's really a microbiologist. You can coin that term, Kiran. You can trademark that if you want
it. I like it a lot.
The reason why I have Kiran here is because, first of all, he's a dear friend. Second of all, he's also on the same mission, which is to help heal the planet one gut at a time. And I have written this book called Healing SIBO. I'm the founder of SIBO SOS and Chronic Condition Rescue. And happy to report we've had millions of people download our information and participate in our special events, many of which are free. Kiran is the co-founder of Microbiome Labs. That is now part of the largest enzyme manufacturer in the world. He is the co-founder. When they started, where's my bottle? Here it is. This is the old label, but this is the famous Megaspore Biotic, which you may probably have heard of if you've been into the gut health search for a while. Fortunately, they've been continuing to expand their products. And today we're going to be talking about two very important things. We're going to add in the spores. We're going to be talking about Megaquin D, which is the combination of K2 and D3. Mm-hmm. Did you know that Kiran started his career in the D3 calcium world? So we're going to learn a lot from him. This is a little bit of a special request from people who came to the first one we did about this. It was so informative. And we were like, what? Like a lot of aha moments. Okay. Then there's a new product coming out that, for those of you here before I hit record, he's going to tell us about for your kids. Super excited about that. And I'm going to get out of the way and talk to Kiran right now. Kiran Krishnan, welcome. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me, Siobhan. It's always good to be with you. Thank you.
Well, we love you. Guys, you can also see everything he's done with us on our SIBO space SOS. So it's SIBO, then there's a little space SOS YouTube channel, which Kiran, we had 290,000 minutes watched on our YouTube channel last month.
Wow, that's amazing.
Bonkers. It's bonkers. Wow. So people are hungry for the information. Kiran, tell us how you got started in this whole D3, K2 world and why it's so important for us.
Yeah, so it actually started with K2. K2 has been a passion of mine for a long time. So keep in mind, K2 is a fat-soluble vitamin, and we don't have a lot of fat-soluble vitamins in nature, right? So we have vitamin A, which most people are familiar with. We have vitamin E, vitamin D, and vitamin K. So basically, we have four, right? These vitamins do so many things in the system, in our system, in animals, in plants, and virtually every biological system there is. And there's only four of them, right? Four of these fat-soluble vitamins. In our food supply, we get a pretty decent amount of D, right? Because lots of things are fortified with D. We also get it, of course, from natural sunlight, which is a really potent way of getting it. We get a really good amount of A and E because lots of things are fortified with A and E, especially E, because E is a tocopherol. It's an antioxidant. People put it in food so foods don't spoil. So you're getting a good amount of E. As it turns out, you don't need a whole lot of A to begin with, but you're getting A from lots of different food sources. One of the four that you're missing is vitamin K2, right? It's an essential vitamin. It does so many things in the body, and we'll talk about what it does. It supports the utilization of all the other vitamins, and we get none of it in our diet at all, right? We are all clinically deficient in vitamin K2. So what happens when you're clinically deficient in vitamin K2? Number one, your bones are absolutely weak. You need vitamin K2 to build bone, whether you're a kid or you're an adult or you're postmenopausal, whatever age you are, you need vitamin K2 to sustain or build bone, right? We know that fracture risk is a big issue. It's a major health issue. The moment you have a hip fracture, your risk for mortality goes way up, right? So we know fracture risk and bone mineral density and bone strength and all that is a very, very critical thing. Vitamin K2 is absolutely essential for that because it sticks calcium on the bone, right? Vitamin D helps you absorb calcium. Vitamin D also activates a protein called osteocalcin But vitamin D does not stick calcium on the bone. It requires vitamin K2 to actually take the calcium and stick it on the bone. So it does the very last important step in bone building. We get none of it in our diet. Vitamin K2 is also the only compound ever shown to remove calcium from your arteries, right? Calcification of the arteries is the number one risk factor for heart disease, right? And anyone can go for $50 and get something called a high-speed CT, a calcium score, or a coronary calcium score. That is the best predictor of whether or not you have an impending heart attack that's coming, right? And every physician, every cardiologist in the world would encourage you to do that in men, especially if you're above the age of 45, and in women, if you're above the age of 55, or you have any family history and so on. Calcium in your arteries is the number one risk. It also drives blood pressure issues and so on. And it's the biggest driver of cardiovascular disease. There's only one compound in the world that removes calcium from the arteries, and that's vitamin K2-7. Right. So just from that alone, we're talking about osteoporosis and cardiovascular disease. Right. Right? Two of the biggest of the five killers in the modern world. This single vitamin helps reduce the risk of all of those. Right. There was a study, and this is backed by a tremendous amount of studies. Right. So if you look at vitamin K2-7, there are probably 350 to 400 published human clinical trials on it. Some very big ones, like the Rotterdam study, which is a 4,800 patient study over 10 years. And they showed that taking just 45 micrograms of vitamin K2-7, just 45 yeah. micrograms, reduced cardiovascular mortality by 50%.
What?
50. Nothing else can do that, right? What? The biggest prescription drugs in the world for, you know, cholesterol and all that, at best can reduce it around 25%. 50%.
Okay, right? This has 200. I don't know if you can see it. Trust me. It says 200 microgram, MCG, micrograms. Yeah, and right. This is what someone was asking, what's it called? I can't see my camera. This is it. Megaquin D3. And Clarissa is going to post a link for everybody to get very rare 25% off your entire cart from Microbiome Labs right now. So on delay. You want to go and load up on the new gummies, which for your kids and for your mega spore and for your mega, I can never get the name right, Megaquin D3. Yeah. Okay. Thank you, Kieran, for that. That is very generous and very temporary, everybody. Okay.
Yeah. So 50% cardiovascular disease, right? Okay. So now we've dealt with bone health. There was a study called the Nurse Health Study. There's a number of studies on vitamin K2-7 and bone health, and you can reduce fracture risk by 80, 90%. It's that powerful, right? Now, then go on to other things. So Tufts University had done a number of studies on the role of vitamin K2-7 in reducing the risk of going from pre-diabetic to diabetic. Right, diabetes. So it helps with blood sugar control as well, right? And again, none of these are our studies. These are all in the public domain. You can go read about them. Just go into PubMed or any of these places and push vitamin K2-7, put it in there. You'll see all of these published studies come up. And these are large scale studies done by the top research institutes in the world. So vitamin K2-7 helps with blood sugar control. Then there's big cancer studies like the Heidelberg cohort study, where they looked at having adequate levels of vitamin K2-7 and its support for the system in terms of cancer risk, right? And they looked at prostate cancer in men and numerous other cancers in people. That's 11,800 patient study over 13 years.
Wow,
right? So this is a nutrient, right? It's an essential nutrient that we do not get in our diet at all. And that's a critical part of it. It's the quintessential supplement, because the whole idea behind dietary supplements is about supplementing your diet with critical nutrients that aren't adequately found in the diet. So why do we not get it in our diet? Well, number one, the most rich sources of vitamin K2-7 in the diet come from certain types of fermented foods. In Northern Europe, it's certain types of fermented cheeses. We don't consume those here. You can get it from eating organ meat or brain. We don't eat that. Right. Or you can get it from a certain type of Japanese fermented soybean food called natto, which is the richest natural source. We don't eat any of those things here as well. So nothing in our diet constitutes us getting vitamin K2-7. There are studies that show that at least 95% of the population in the Western world are clinically deficient in vitamin K2-7. And if you are, then you are at a significantly increased risk of things like cardiovascular disease, osteoporosis, you know, diabetes, blood sugar issues, and so on. So all of these are critical things for this nutrient.
I love this bottle. Okay, so here's the deal. How this says serving one capsule per day. I have a lot of questions coming in. One per day with food?
With food, yes. Because fat-soluble vitamins are absorbed better with food.
Right.
With food. So what our goal here is to just get people access to this basic nutrition. Now, why did we pair vitamin D3 with the K2? That's a critical question, right? So vitamin D3 is way ahead of vitamin K2 in terms of its awareness. Everybody knows about D3 and has known about D3 for almost a decade now. Every doctor will tell you to take vitamin D3, right? Whether it's an allopathic or functional doctor, everybody understands the importance of D3. There is an issue, however, that there is a issue of vitamin D toxicity, right? There's something called hypervitaminosis D. Hypervitaminosis D is a condition where you have too much vitamin D. And what that does is it leads to a tremendous amount of soft tissue calcification throughout your body, right? And the reason for that is vitamin D depletes your body of vitamin K2 if you don't take them together. Now, here's why. I'll give you one simple mechanism, right? So vitamin D comes in and it activates a type of cell in your body called an osteoblastic cell. This is a bone building cell. It causes that cell to release a protein called osteocalcin. This protein needs vitamin K2 to come along and activate it, right? So if you're taking a whole bunch of vitamin D, what you're doing is causing the release of lots of osteocalcin. All of that osteocalcin is going to grab onto all the vitamin K2 to try to get it activated, to try to activate the protein and use up all the vitamin K2. So you'll get benefits from the vitamin D up to the point where you've depleted your vitamin K2 so severely that now you don't have K2 protecting against the calcification. So you actually increase your risk of soft tissue calcification. So hypervitaminosis D, vitamin D toxicity, is a severe form of vitamin K2 deficiency, right? So if you're gonna take vitamin D, you have to take it with K2. They work in concert. The four fat-soluble vitamins all work together in concert. Vitamin K2 also affects the function of vitamin A. Vitamin K2 can also affect the function of vitamin E, right? There's only four of them, and they do all of this chemistry in the body. They need one another. And so the way we see it is it's really important. If you're going to be taking vitamin D3, you have to get adequate amounts of vitamin K2 in with the product.
Okay, so this is what it's called, MegaQuin D3. You have 25% off temporarily. If you can go to Microbiome Labs, you have to create an account. It's all pretty straightforward. Clarissa's put it in the chat. So this is that combination that is most recommended. And what if you get vitamin D from the sun, Kieran? And also, how much is K2 have a toxicity level?
It doesn't. That's the beauty of vitamin K2, is that we've done a number of tox studies. You cannot find what we call an LD50 of vitamin K2. So LD50 is the way you determine the toxic dose of something, right? It's LD stands for lethal dose 50. So basically, unfortunately, you have to do this on animal studies, but you do in mice and so on, and you dose them really high with the whatever the target nutrient is or compound, and then you find the dose that caused death in the animal, right? And then you go 50% below that dose as the maximum level. Right. So we've looked for LD50, we've done the tox studies, we can't find a dose that will actually kill an animal. And so vitamin K2 does not have any toxicity that we know of, which is great.
Okay. Lena is asking this question. And also I've gotten a separate email when they knew we were doing this today, my wonderful audience. And what is the ideal ratio of D3 to K2? But there's something out there that people are hearing that if taking too much D3 without K2 can cause calcification of the arteries. Yes, that's exactly what he's been saying, Lena. Yes, that's what he's been saying. But sorry, I was thinking of something else, which was opposite of that, which is somebody wrote me and said, I've heard they're not supposed to be together, which is the exact opposite. Why is that out there? There's so much like
somebody forwarded me like a screenshot of a talk that was going on yesterday, actually just yesterday, and they said, hey, there this two people, and I can't remember who they were, are making a compelling argument for why you don't take D3 and K2 together because they compete. And it just blew my mind. And I'm like, where are they getting this information from, right? They don't compete. They're not competing vitamins. There's no such thing as a competitive vitamin. There's only four fat-soluble vitamins. You think nature has developed some mechanism by which these vitamins fight with each other? You know, and this is what we've been using through the course of human evolution as nutrients. And, you know, did our ancestors have the luxury of separating their D3 from their K2 somehow, right? It's not complete nonsensical information. So you absolutely need to take your D3 with K2. The research and the science is absolutely clear. We know exactly how K2 works. It works through carboxylation and it works through redox reactions. D3 does not do that. D3 does not have a carboxylation, does not have redox reactions, and it works on completely separate things. In fact, they support one another in a very significant way, just like all the fat-soluble vitamins do, right? It's like saying, don't take B6 with B12 because they fight with each other.
Right.
What sense does that make? You know, like it's nonsensical information.
Myth is busted, everybody. Myth is busted. Please comment on the role of magnesium with this product. Hi, Cynthia.
Yeah. So K2 has a couple of cofactors that help some of its enzymatic reactions, right? So the carboxylation reaction I was talking about that K2 facilitates is an enzymatic reaction. K2 is not an enzyme, but it does facilitate that enzymatic reaction. So zinc, magnesium can help K2 facilitate its enzymatic reaction. If you're getting just even the basic level amount of zinc, if you're getting just a basic amount of magnesium, that tends to be enough. All of these things work at very, very low doses. As you can see, K2 is in the microgram dose, not even in the milligram dose, right? So microgram is 1,000-fold less than a milligram. So it works at very low doses throughout the body. So you don't need a whole bunch of zinc and magnesium. You just need some. You need adequate intake. Now, the answer to the question of the ideal ratio, D3 to K2, right? It's hard to know what the ideal ratio is, but there are studies on the combination of D3 and K2 showing that that's a more powerful combination than D3 alone. And then they've used specific doses like 5,000 IUs of D3 and about 200 micrograms of K2. So that, from a clinical perspective, seems to work really well, right? I would say that if you're taking 5,000 IUs of D3, you absolutely want at the minimum 200 micrograms of K2. Okay. One of the things that people have to think about is if you're getting vitamin D from other sources, right? So for example, in the summertime, I don't take the D3 K2 product, right? In the summertime, I take the K2 only product. So we have a product called Megaquinone, which is just K2, right, by itself, or Myomax, which is just K2 by itself. And you may have those products, Siobhan, but it's somewhere around, right?
Yeah, it's floating around. What does the Myomax? What is the color of the bottle here?
With the new branding, it's kind of this red orange color, I think, maybe.
All right, I'm out of control. Hold on. Is that with the fishies on it?
No, that's the Omega product.
What's the Myomax again?
Myomax, actually, let me look. I might have it.
Okay. Clarissa, can you just hang on? Can you just check the coupon? Yes, and also go to our YouTube channel. We're gonna mail this out, everybody. First of all, second of all, the YouTube channel is SIBO and then like space SOS. So please do come join us for that. But definitely read your email because we'll have a reminder. We'll have the link. We'll have the coupon, and then you'll link. And when you want to see this replay, you'll also see all of the other things I've done with Karen, which is extensive. Somebody's saying the coupon doesn't work. So Clarissa's checking for us. Okay, go ahead, Karen.
Okay, so the K2 only product is called this. It's called Megaquinone.
Yes.
You can see here. And this is a K2 with D3, which is Megaquin D3, right? So in the winter, I live in Chicago in the Midwest. So I don't get much sun exposure at all, basically from November till almost beginning of May. And so I use the Megaquin D3 because I'm not getting any natural source of D3 from the sun. When it becomes late spring and summer, I'm outside a lot. I cycle outside for hours, so I get adequate sun intake. I eat a good amount of fat in my diet, so I'm making enough vitamin D3. And so at that time, I don't need any additional supplemental D3, so I use just the megaquinone, which is actually 160 micrograms or so per capsule. So in the summer, I actually use two caps a day of this K2. I actually get 320 micrograms of K2 because I know my D3 levels are going to be really high.
That's really nice. That's a really nice combination. So you can make it flexible. Okay. So the coupon is expired. We don't know what's happening, but we're working on it. So hang on. It'll be worth the wait. Okay. Is there any level of K2 that diabetics should take? Talk to your doctors, people.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we don't want to diagnose or treat any of those conditions, but there is, if you're looking at, you know, circulatory health. So we also did, we've got a number of patents on K2 rescuing mitochondria. We have patents on K2 with improving microvascular circulation, which is a thing that diabetics start to be concerned about. And then of course, blood sugar control, right? So most of those studies are done with 100 micrograms per day. So the 200 micrograms in the Megaquin D3, you're covered. And then the 320 micrograms in just a straight K2, you're covered under that as well. So remember, this has 200 micrograms with 5,000 IUs of D3. This is perfect if you're not getting natural D3 through winter months and so on. And then if you are getting adequate sun exposure, then you stick with the high dose K2 standalone. Now, this one has some zinc, magnesium, and a couple other cofactors in it to help with the functionality of vitamin K2 in the system.
Nice. Okay. Someone was asking about that. Okay. Okay. Here we go. Hold on, Clarissa. I thought that the coupon for the webinar was NoBloat 25, and we're saying that that's not working. Okay. We're working on it. Clarissa, can you just Slack Lisa to see about, just tell her what's happening, please. Thank you. All right. What is the ideal level of vitamin D3, do you think, in blood levels?
It really depends on what your blood levels are, right? So you can check blood levels of D3. For me, I don't check my blood levels of D3. I think I get adequate amounts. I have no reason to believe I'm significantly deficient in D3. And so through the winter, I take about 5,000 IUs, which seems to do the trick for me. I don't experience anything that's a D3 deficiency. I know with K2, I need between 200 to 320 micrograms per day. My body uses a lot of K2. I tend to move a lot. I'm very active. My mitochondria need to function very well, and K2 is essential for the mitochondria. I want to maintain heart health, we have family history of heart disease. So for me, that's on the forefront of my mind all the time. So I've been taking K2 for the last 12, 15 years, pretty consistently for that reason. So for me, I take higher amounts of K2, and I'm ensure that I'm taking that every single day, all throughout the year.
We're going to give you an update. The coupon is no more bloat 25. So we added the word more, and the coupon is more. So it's no more bloat 25. Clarissa, can you just tell Lisa that we're just going for it. Okay. Thanks everybody. You do need to use the little, sign up as a patient direct, yada, yada. Clarissa is putting the instructions in the chat repeatedly. Thank you. Okay. Karen, did I just ask you, because I got a little distracted, can we check our K2 levels?
There isn't a commercial test right now. I think one of the micronutrient tests that's available, I think through SpectraCell, might do that. But I have my doubts as to how accurate that is, because it's an intercellular test, not a serum test. And it hasn't been validated in published literature. So I don't know how adequate it is. But here's the thing. You absolutely no, you are deficient in K2 because you don't get any from natural sources, right? We are all deficient in K2. I may not be because I've been taking it for a long time. So right. We do absolutely have to supplement it. And when you look at the data on supplementation and what we call pharmacokinetics, which is what happens to the compound in your body when you take a supplement, and we've done those studies ourselves, about 300 micrograms or so is about the ceiling of benefit. Beyond that, you don't necessarily get any additional benefit. There's no danger. You can take more. There are natural foods like natto, the fermented food in Japan, that has upwards of 600 micrograms per day. But from what we can see measuring the biological activity of K2, if you're getting around 200 to 300 micrograms per day, you're at a very good level of K2 in your serum. And K2 builds over time because it's got about a 72-hour half-life, right? So every dose that you take will last in your body about 72 hours, and the doses will layer on each other a little bit over time, giving you, after about 3 or 4 weeks, a good stable level of vitamin K2 in your system, which is exactly what you want.
What about if K... Guys, everyone, put your questions in the Q&A box. Sorry if I didn't ask you that before, and please don't do the chat while other than tech issues and coupon issues. Catherine, what about supplements that contain K1 and K2 in a gel cap?
Mm-hmm. That's fine. And there's something else about K2 I want to make sure I cover, and that's okay. A synthetic component to it. That's fine. So K1 and K2 together are perfectly great, right? And in fact, we add K1 at 90 micrograms to the K2 only product, the one that doesn't have D3. And the reason why we add K1 is because your liver needs K1. That's what it uses to build clotting factors, right? And what the indication is that if you're not getting enough K1, your liver will hoard some of the K2 and not release it to the rest of the body, right? And K2 works what we call extrahepatically. That means outside of the liver. So K2 is supposed to go to other things like your tissues, your skin, your bones, your vascular system. K1 stays in the liver. So if you satisfy the liver, then the K2 can go out to the periphery. So they're perfectly fine taking them together. There is one big danger right now in the K2 marketplace, which is a danger to me in vitamins in general, right? And that is anytime a vitamin starts to gain in awareness and popularity, inevitably, there are going to be companies that are trying to capture the market with low cost. And the way they do it is by going synthetic. So they start doing a chemical synthesis to produce the vitamin rather than getting it from fermentation. So where we get our K2, which is a natural form of K2, is through fermentation. Our spores, the megaspore spores, are the biggest natural producers of vitamin K27, right? So these lovely spores do that for us naturally. And that's how that fermented food natto has such high levels of K2, because the spores are producing it during the fermentation process. And that's how we came to discover it, because in working with the spores, we came to find out that they produce very high levels of K2 as well, right? And so that's a natural source of K2. That's how you naturally get it, is from fermentation. Fermentation is a costly and difficult process, but it provides you with the natural version of K2, which is completely different than the synthetic version. And the reason why is because of something called organic chemistry, right? I know many people here may have taken organic chemistry and probably hated it. And probably the worst part about organic chemistry is something called stereochemistry, right? Stereochemistry is all about the geometrical shape of bonds, right? Remember that all these elements, you know, your carbon, your hydrogen, your nitrogen, all are bonded together to form molecules, right? And they have bonds in between them. Those bonds can have different geometries to them, right? So there's cis and trans and R and S and all these different configurations. So what happens when you synthesize a molecule like a vitamin K27? You've got this ring shape. This is the quinone ring that makes up the core of the vitamin K2 molecule, right? That's why it's called a menaquinone. That quinone ring is distinct. Same with K1 has a ring too, but it's called phylloquinone, right? So the ring, and then off the ring, there's this tail of these methyl groups that makes up vitamin K27. And in fact, in K27, there's 7 units in the tail. That's how it becomes K27, right? Okay. So now, if I'm a synthetic chemist and I'm going to reproduce this compound in a synthetic way, I get a starting material and I start building the compound, one quinone ring, putting on the methyl groups one at a time through synthetic chemistry. The problem with synthetic chemistry is when you artificially create bonds between molecules, it creates many different geometric structures, right? Those are called stereoisomers. Now, stereoisomers means that it has the same molecular formula, meaning the same number of carbons and hydrogens and nitrogens and so on, but the structure of the molecule is completely different, which means it functions differently in the body, right? This was discovered in pharmaceuticals, actually. In the late 80s, there was a number of cases of pharmaceutical drugs that were coming out in the market. And remember, most of these pharmaceutical drugs are synthetic molecules, right? That they're building through organic chemistry. So drugs were coming out in the marketplace, and some drugs would have versions of them that were actually completely lethal, right? Some drugs would have some versions of the same drug would be beneficial. Another version of the same drug would be absolutely lethal, right? Same molecule in all sense, in terms of the number of carbons and all that, but the structure was completely different because when you synthesize a molecule, you're going to get all these different geometries to it, right? Nature only produces one geometry, and that's the beauty of nature. So the FDA made it very clear that they will never approve a drug that isn't chirally pure. What that means is you, when you produce the molecule, depending on the number of carbon centers, you can get upwards of 50-100 different versions of the molecule. You have to pick out the one version that is beneficial, isolate it, and only sell that version. The other 49 needs to go away, right?
Yeah.
So when these supplement companies are doing synthetic chemistry to produce K2, they produce a mixture that has upwards of 36 different K2 compounds in it, right? And we don't know what any of those other 35 do. One of them is likely one that looks like the natural compound. The other 35, you have no idea.
Right.
Not to mention that with each synthetic chemistry step, you're producing these small organic, not organic in the sense that you think about organic chemistry, molecules that are chemical contaminants that are not identified, but are in the product, right? That is synthetic chemistry, right? And so when you're taking a synthetic vitamin, what you're getting is this mixture of different versions of that vitamin. Most of the versions probably are non-functional. Some of them can even be problematic. And then you're getting this product that has all of these chemical contaminants in it as well. All the while, there's a natural version of it, which is a version that has all the studies behind it, right? So that's a big risk we have now.
Let me ask you, let me restate the point here, which is that there's synthetic out there in the marketplace being marketed as if it is organic with all these spontaneous, you know, like byproducts coming out of it. And it's not the same as the natural fermentation process that you use, correct?
That's exactly right. Yes.
Okay. So just got that. Okay.
A synthetic vitamin will have many different configurations of that vitamin molecule. Most of the configurations, we don't know what they do. Some of them can be problematic in the system. They certainly won't help you in any way. And there are chemical byproducts in there as well from the synthetic chemistry that had to occur in order to produce the molecule. The problem is when you look at the label, they don't disclose that it's synthetic, right? You don't know that it's synthetic. It doesn't say on there synthetic vitamin K27. It says vitamin K27. And so you really have to dig in to figure out if the vitamin you're taking is a synthetic chemical or it's a natural fermented chemical product, byproduct. And so what we really need to understand is the sources of these things, right? And we've been working on natural fermented vitamin K27 now for almost 2 decades. And we're one of the only global sources of natural fermented vitamin K27 because most companies are moving towards the synthetic because it's much cheaper to produce and you can have much higher margins.
Okay, so you just answered a ton of questions for people. Where's the zinc in this, Lena? I don't see zinc. Is there zinc in this?
In the Megaquin
D3? Lena's saying she sees zinc. I don't see zinc.
Yeah, there's 15 milligrams of zinc.
Where is that, Siobhan? Where is that?
Right under magnesium. So magnesium and zinc.
I have vitamin D3 and then vitamin K2.
Oh, you're looking at the Megaquin D3.
What do you have?
She's talking about the K2 alone product.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, thank you, thank you. So get this then, Lena. Get a Megaquin D3 because then they'll have no zinc. Okay, what about blood clots? People are having blood clot issues. Can they still take this? And if that is a medical question, then just say so and we'll tell them to talk to their doctors, of course.
Yeah, I mean, you should absolutely talk to your doctor anyway.
Absolutely.
But I will say that, you know, if you're taking like the old fashioned blood thinners, Coumadin, right, or heparin, those are vitamin K antagonist products. They work by inhibiting the function of vitamin K1 in the liver, which is the vitamin you need for clotting. So they work against that vitamin so that you don't clot as much, right? In that case, vitamin K1 is something that you shouldn't take with those old blood thinners. K2, not necessarily, right? You can still take K2 because it works outside of the liver, but you should absolutely be talking to your doctor about that. And you'll be measuring things like your PTINR and so on. But those are things that you want to navigate with your doctor. Now, the modern day anticoagulants are not vitamin K inhibitors. And so there's no contraindication with taking any vitamin K products as well. So you should be able to, if you're taking one of the more modern versions of blood thinners. But again, if you're thinking about the role with prescription drugs, please talk to your doctor about that.
And Lena is an MD, so I have to give her a shout out because she comes to so many of these to truly get educated and help her patients. So then
Lena will understand. If you or your patients are, you know, on the old school Coumadin or heparin, vitamin K antagonist, you can actually take vitamin K2 with great success. It'll stabilize the INR, but you want to measure the INR as you dose up, right?
What's INR for the rest of us?
So that's your prothrombin time. That looks at your clotting time.
Got it. Thank you.
Patients on those blood thinners measure that at some regular interval. So to know that they're not too thin in terms of their blood, or their blood is not clotting too fast, right? And they adjust their dose of the anticoagulants that way. But the newest ones that are not vitamin K antagonists, there's no contraindication at all.
Diane and Mickey basically have the same question. What's the difference between MK4 and MK7 again?
Yep. So MK4 is a synthetic version. That's another synthetic version. Okay. K2, okay. Right? So K2 comes in two forms, K27, which means 7 subunits, or K24, which means 4 subunits. Now, in the body, you will find natural MK4. The reason you find that is certain cells in the body and certain organs will actually break down K27 into 4 to utilize it that way, right? Okay. But outside of the body, when you look at it in products, all of the K24 comes as a result of synthetic chemistry because there isn't a rich natural source of K24.
Okay. Some random questions about, is K2 helpful for Parkinson's?
I mean, so it's a neurological disorder, right? And we've done a bunch of studies on neurons and the ability of K2 to help support and regenerate the neurological cells, right? So, to me, anything neurological, K2 would be a huge help for. We don't know. We haven't done a study in Parkinson's. Okay. There is a published study out of Belgium on a Parkinson's model with vitamin K2, showing that in that model system that the K2 was able to support some of those cells that are becoming dysfunctional in the neurons. So they could help. But K2 is essential anyway, right? It doesn't matter what condition you have, you should be taking it because it's an essential nutrient. Okay. It may help with lots of different things, but fundamentally we need it in our system or our system's going to fall apart.
Okay, Beth, I just sent you a name of someone who I want you to look up online, and then peripheral neuropathy, traumatic brain injury.
Five studies on peripheral neuropathy, yep.
Guys, this is amazing.
Five published studies on it.
That's amazing. Traumatic brain injuries. Any thoughts on that?
So K2, some of the highest concentration of K2 in the body is in the brain. So the brain utilizes more energy per capita than almost any other part of the body. And to regenerate the brain, you need a lot of energy as well, right? K2 being a key thing that affects mitochondria, which is the powerhouses of your cell, becomes really an important thing to generate energy. And so it really is incredibly important for the brain. So I would say anytime any organ system is damaged, you have to provide that organ system with the basic nutrients it needs to potentially repair itself. Right.
Okay.
This is where foundational nutrition comes in.
What about the skin? I wanted to also show the skin. Where's my bottle of this
Serene Skin
Essential? Serene Skin.
Yeah.
I think it's by my bed. So Serene Skin is definitely a formulation you should look into, Christina. And then he's talking about the K2 as being essential for everybody, right? Mm-hmm. There's
it's the most important. I mean, I can't think of a nutrient, a micronutrient that's more important to supplement than K2, not only because it's omnipotent in the body, meaning it works in so many organ systems doing critical things. It's also the one that we don't get any of in our diet, right? So it is the quintessential supplement. Now, in Serene Skin, it's interesting. We do have K2 in Serene Skin, right? Serene Skin is a spore-based probiotic for skin and non-cystic acne. And we put K2 in there for a couple of reasons. One is because K2 is really important for the skin, right? One of the hallmarks of aging is calcification of your collagen and elastin protein. So, and when you lose functionality in collagen and elastin, you lose the integrity of the skin, and that's how wrinkles can form over time. So it's just good for the skin in general. Number two is we have empirical data. We haven't done a clinical trial on this, but we have good empirical data that vitamin K2 reduces the appearance of hyperpigmentation spots, right? So darkening spots. And a lot of people, when they have lesions, like an acne lesion, and the lesion goes away, it leaves a dark spot. Right? That's a hyperpigmentation. That's going to be a healing issue. So what we've done is we put K2 in there to try to reduce some of that hyperpigmentation formation in people that are trying to get rid of their acne.
Do you know what the ideal levels of D3 in the blood are? And again, optimal. I mean, there's you go to LabQuest, you go to, you know, LabCorp, excuse me, or Quest. Yeah. That has a lot to do with where you live and the region, and then they come up with the, you know, good, bad, and, you know, high, low based on that. So that's very interesting to me, because if I lived in California, it'd be different than I lived in New York. But then also different naturopaths and different functional medicine practitioners definitely have a different opinion than what is going on with traditionally trained MDs. So Kieran, what are your thoughts there?
Yeah, I think it's really, really hard to say, because we don't have really good cohort data where you know, these people have this level of D3 and they are free from all these conditions, and these people don't have that level and they have all these conditions, right? We don't have that kind of population trials as much. We actually have that on K2, as it turns out. There's studies comparing British women with Eastern Japanese women compared to Western Japanese women, because even in Japan has very high intake of vitamin K2 in the Western part of the country because they eat natto. In the eastern part of the country, they don't eat natto, so they have very low intake of vitamin K2. And there's been tons of studies comparing heart disease rates, osteoporosis rates, strokes, hip fractures, all dementia, all of these things, comparing Eastern and Western Japanese people. And they see a huge discrepancy, right? And the only difference is their intake levels of vitamin K2. And so we don't have similar kinds of studies in a given population with D3. But I would say, you know, if you're registering, I don't know, 45, 50 on your D3 test, you're probably okay. But I think, to me, I never really measured my D3, because I can't really quantify this level with this risk. What I try to do is make sure that I'm getting D3 into my system, right? So if it's the winter time, I'm taking 5,000 IUs when I'm not getting sun exposure. Late spring and summer, when I'm getting adequate sun exposure, I don't take any supplement at all, right?
Okay.
So I don't think you have to be as measured about it as we prescribe it to be.
Okay. So, okay. Regina, he talked about at the beginning, the other foods that have the K2 in it. What is nano? Can you just describe it? People are like, I'll just get nano. What exactly is it? Do we have to make it ourselves? Can I go to a ethnic foods.
Oh, natto, natto, yes.
How do you spell it?
So N-A-T-T-O.
Okay.
Natto.
Okay.
Japanese would say natto. To properly pronounce it. So it's basically a fermented soybean. It's a really difficult food
to eat.
It smells like old gym socks. You know, and the story behind natto is that it was credited to this samurai named Miramoto, who is one of the most well-known samurais in Japanese folklore. It was credited to him to be the first human to try natto. And they always said it took the courage of a samurai to try this food because it's so obnoxious, right?
I'm sorry I asked. Okay.
it's amazing. But, you know, half of Japan eats it every day and there's lots of health benefits from it, right? Because it's so rich in K2, it also is made by bacillus spores. So it's the same probiotic bacteria that we have in Megaspore. And then it has all these other nutrients in it because it is a fermented food. Now you can buy natto. You can order deep frozen natto, you know, from certain ethnic distributors. And then you put it in the oven and you can eat it, but it's a very, very acquired taste.
Let's move on.
Hence
let's just get this and move on. Yeah. Okay. We only have a few minutes left, but I wanted to cover a couple more. So if someone's taking calcium, there's a lot of controversy about taking calcium as the science emerges, everybody. Seriously. Megaquin D3 would be like, should you take a calcium supplement? I mean,
I would never either.
I've learned from Kieran and other research, I personally would never. And it is, yeah. I think, a lot of marketing.
I mean, we're not deficient in calcium. There's no evidence that the Western or any part of the world is deficient in calcium because calcium is in so many things, right? Like the biggest carrier system in most foods and supplements is calcium carbonate, right? You're getting a ton of calcium through many, many different sources throughout the day. And calcium by itself does nothing in the body. It's an inert rock. Right? Calcium has to be directed in the body by things like D3 and K2. Right?
Guys,
British Journal of Medicine published a study, I think it was in 2012, if I'm not mistaken, showing that if you take 1,000 milligrams of calcium, they were focusing on perimenopausal and postmenopausal women, right? Because that's who's normally directed to take 1,000 milligrams of calcium a day at a minimum. For every one case of osteoporosis you may help, you create 2 cases of cardiovascular disease. So taking calcium as a supplement by itself can double your risk for heart disease because the calcium doesn't know where to go, right? You take it in the system, it's going to end up in all your soft tissue because you don't have D3 and K2 to direct it in the right place.
If you eat green leafy vegetables, you're getting some calcium. You don't need to drink a glass of milk to get calcium, okay? This is very old 1960s, 1970s marketing. So I need to move on. But you guys have a lot of information right there. I definitely want to recommend that you try this. I'm not a doctor. I will personally never take a calcium supplement ever, ever, ever. And believe me, I was thinking about it. And then I learned all of this. And so it's changed everything for me. We have a couple of questions about the sleep. Mm-hmm. I have a couple, and then we have an announcement, you guys and gals. Zen Biome Sleep. Can you just touch on that special request?
Yeah, absolutely. So that's the first and most well-studied psychobiotic strain. That means it's a probiotic bacteria that impacts the brain and brain activity, right? And this works through what we know as a gut-brain axis, which is now coming to be understood as one of the most powerful and impactful axes because when you have a dysfunction in the gut-brain axis, it not only affects the brain, but it also impacts the gut. IBS, for example, which is the biggest sweeping diagnosis and it incorporates numerous gut issues, including SIBO, right, which is thought to be IBS, is actually a gut-brain disorder, not a gut disorder. Right. And so that research is coming out hard and fast. We actually work with one of the preeminent gastroenterologists who does this work, Dr. Eamon Quigley, who's in Houston. And he's doing a talk for us coming out at the end of this month on the latest research on IBS as a gut brain disorder. And psychobiotics play a very important role in it. This 1714 strain has been shown to not only, of course, reduce cortisol and stress response and so on, it also dramatically improves your sleep quality. It reduces time to sleep, which means how long it takes you to fall asleep, and it improves sleep efficiency and quality as well, because the reason you're not sleeping is your brain is stuck and your central nervous system is stuck in a sympathetic state, not a parasympathetic state, right? You're in this activated flight or fight state where your body does not want you to sleep and rest. It's not time for rest and digest. It's time to fight or fight and flee, right? So this helps you get back into the parasympathetic state so you can actually sleep properly.
That sounds fantastic. By the way, we are going to be going to Kieran's Instagram account in less than 8 minutes. So if anyone wants Microbiome Labs, sorry, thanks, Microbiome Labs. So if anyone wants to continue this conversation, but I'm trying to get to one very specific question. So hang on for just a second. Mary, my doctor made me quit taking vitamin D because my level got too high and I ended up with a calcium level in my blood, like you say, even though I was taking 45 micrograms of K7 a day. So can I take your compound and not create too much D in my body, or is it safe just to take K?
Yeah. So too much D is only a problem if you don't have K, right? That's the whole problem with too much D, is it creates an even a bigger deficiency in vitamin K, and you'll end up with calcification throughout your body. So as long as you're taking D3 and K2 together, you're doing fine. Now, if you're getting D from other sources that you're not familiar with, right? And that may be a thing you have to look into, the drinks you have, the foods you eat and so on, because lots of these things are fortified with vitamin D. Or maybe you live in a place where you're getting adequate sunshine and your body makes vitamin D very efficiently, which means you won't need to supplement with it. In that case, then you just need the K2. Now, keep in mind, here's another thing with K2. I talk about the synthetic version and why that's a problem. So you could have been taking 45 micrograms of a synthetic K2, which is not necessarily going to do anything in your system the same way a natural K2 will do. The other problem is vitamin K2 is a highly reactive molecule, meaning it drives an enzymatic reaction. So it's sensitive to things like light and moisture and so on. It can degrade very fast when it's not in the body. And what we found is that a lot of manufacturers or finished product manufacturers aren't taking the care that's required to properly formulate, encapsulate, and bottle vitamin K27, so you're losing a lot of potency in the product. We've tested products that say 50 micrograms on the label, and we can barely detect any vitamin K2 in the capsule because it's degraded so fast, right? Wow. So that's another issue. And this is why we've specialized in K2 for so long, because to us, this is such an essential nutrient, but it requires a tremendous amount of expertise to actually give people a version that's going to be beneficial to them, right? So just because you've taken K2 in the past, it doesn't mean you actually got any K2 activity, right? So
let me ask you this, because there's a lot of questions about this. Calcium, D3, K2. Mm-hmm. If you are eating green leafies, you're getting a lot of calcium, right? And then do the D3 and K2 if you're not out in the sun a lot, right? Yep. And then if you are out in the sun a lot, you're cycling, you're going to the beach, blah, 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 a lot, hours, then, and I realize that's not scientific, but you know, about how many minutes you were out in the sun. And it has to do with your pigment as well, and where on the planet you are. But then the combination of the D3, K2 is the way to go. Mm-hmm. You're not out in the sun. Okay. Yeah. I have to wrap up this part of the conversation. So I need to have Kieran make an announcement about something that's for your kids. And Kieran, can adults take it too if they're super sensitive?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Okay, yeah. So we finally, it took us a couple of years to get this worked out and figured out, but we finally have Megaspore in gummies. And it's super exciting for us because for me, it's been a passion project because my kids have been taking Megaspore for years now, but every day I'm opening the capsules or my wife is opening the capsules and we're mixing it in something. We had to chase the kids around to go finish that little thing of yogurt and this, that, and the other. It's a battle every single day, right? Now they wake up in the morning and they're like, can I take my gummy? Can I have two? Can I have three? Right. And I've done a few videos about the gummies on my Instagram page. So you can go see it there because they just absolutely love it. So we've been able to develop a pectin gummy that's all natural, that is, you know, doesn't have artificial things in it, has a good nutrient base in it. And then we've been able to stabilize the spores in the gummy. Now, each gummy is about half the daily dose of Megaspore. So it's equivalent to one capsule of Megaspore. So for kids, one gummy a day is perfectly fine. My kids take the equivalent of one gummy a day. For adults, one gummy a day could be a maintenance. But if you're actively trying to treat something or deal with something, you'd probably want two gummies a day if you're going to go to the gummy side of it as well. So it's been super exciting. It's been the number one product launch for us in history. Even better than Megaspore. Of course, Megaspore, we had launched it when nobody knew us. But nonetheless, since then, the other 24 products, this has beat it by a landslide.
That's, you know, amazing.
I was telling Siobhan, we sold what we projected to sell for the first month in the first 3 days. So it just shows how much the market was wanting this delivery format. And I'm glad we took our time and worked out the stability and worked out the formulation and all that. But it's available now. So Megaspore gummies are out.
Okay. Guys, gals, everyone in between, no one else is getting 25% off. Okay. Seriously, that's happening right now. If you want to try them, if you're like, I can't stand another capsule, I'm, you know, whatever, like you don't want to open the Megaspore into your food or whatever, I get it. But it's on the entire cart. This is really unheard of. We're actually worried that the like higher ups are going to flag it. So, so thank you. Actually, do share it with your friends. I'm just saying, while it's there, because it's a big, big opportunity. I love you all so much. I love you, Kieran. Thank you so much. In 2 minutes, we're going live at the Microbiome Labs Instagram account. So we can't wait to see you there. How many products does Microbiome Labs have? Did you say 26?
We have about 25 or 26 now. Yeah. Right.
So it's not like they're out there making everything. They're so specific about and careful about what they choose to make. Very special enzymes, very special, you know, candida formulations, H. pylori formulations. They really go after the niches that are not getting served well and or are really high pain point problems like sleep and skin and your microbiome and all of that, which of course affects everything. So with that being said, thank you for being here. We hope to see you over at the Instagram Live. Kieran and I are confirmed. Wait for it. Hold on. It's a little Kieran heavy month, which I love. Can hardly solve for the first part of the year. On April 17th, we're doing another live together. So all Kieran, all the time. Can't wait to see you then. Please do. If you don't have Instagram, that's okay. That's okay. Lena, you have enough info here, girl. We have covered so much. Go save the planet, Lena. I've got like 6 webinars this week. I got plenty of things to keep you guys going. I love you. I'm going to go. Thank you so much. Use that coupon while it exists. Kieran, I'll see you over at the Microbiome Labs Instagram. Yeah. Live. The link to Instagram, Clarissa, do you have that in our final, like,
I don't know. There's no link. So normally with Instagram, you go to Instagram, you look at Microbiome Labs, you go to our page, and then it'll show you in the top corner that it's live, right?
Okay.
Just click on that and you can join the live.
Okay. All right. Thanks all. All right. Okay. Bye. Thank you so much. Bye. Thanks, Clarissa. I'll see you later, Clarissa. Okay. Bye. Okay.